Welcome to episode 25 of the Business of Making podcast. In this special episode, we do things a little bit differently. And rather than just discuss a topic, we actually answer questions that you guys, members of our community, have asked us. Let's get into it. Do you want to make it as a maker? This is the Business of Making podcast with your hosts, Michaela Denvers, Deb Engelmeyer, and Jess Van Den.
We know from experience that growing a handmade business is bloody hard work. We're here to make it a little bit easier for you by dishing out reality-based, no BS, tried and tested advice on how to make your business work.
Tune in every week for an honest conversation on what it really takes to make a creative business a success.
And welcome to a new episode of the Business of Making podcast. This is Deb. I'm your host today, and I am with Jess.
Hello, everyone.
And Mick.
Hi, hi.
And before we dive in, this is going to be a really special episode, something we've never done before. And we've asked questions in our Patreon, to our Patreons, and also on our Facebook groups. And we're going to try to go as through as many as we can today. So pretty much just answering your questions. So this is going to be nice. We sort of have read quickly the questions, but we don't really remember them. So we'll see.
Are we ever scripted?
We don't really script anything, guys. I think you've noticed that. But yeah, before we dive in, I also wanted to do a shout out to one of our Patreon, and her name is Misty Henry. I work with Misty, and she is amazing. She does product safety and consulting services for sellers. So if you're based in the US, because that's where she's based, and that's the kind of legal requirements that she's looking into, she can help you create lasting memories through safer products. So many products that are handmade and are sold on platforms like Etsy and Shopify have actually legal requirements under their country's law so that, you know, you can keep people safe. So like if you're selling baby things or anything that you're selling really can have legal requirements. And so she helps you get compliant with that. So it's not a topic that necessarily is fun, but she loves it and she actually makes it fun. She's really step by step. She has like a process. She walks you through it. So you can go to productsafetycourses.com to see how she can help you and get in touch with her because she is amazing. And Misty, thank you so much for supporting the podcast.
Thank you, Misty.
Yay. Okay. Now let me pull out those questions. And so the first question is from Paola, and she says, I'm trying to improve my email marketing. Everything is set on my website, but how can I handle those customers on my Etsy shop? I know it's against the rules to use the email addresses for marketing purposes, but I don't really want to lose the connection with them. Is there a way to work around it? Maybe asking via Etsy Convo. Thank you in advance.
In short, yes, but I wouldn't send a convo just asking them to subscribe to my mailing list personally. Yeah. I'll say what I do because obviously I have an Etsy shop and I've been doing this for many years. So I have a customer thank you message that I send. You know, when somebody buys an Etsy, they get like an automated email and there's like a little message in there that you can change, but I send them a separate convo manually every single time somebody buys from me. And I have basically a script, or I call it a pro forma, that I send to them, and you can save it in those little snippets in Etsy, which makes it really easy. And I talk about all sorts of stuff, and that could be a whole episode, but at the bottom I have a PS, and my PS says, you know, if you'd like to follow the ethereal journey or whatever, here's our Instagram. And if you'd like 10% off your next order on our website, here's my mailing list sign up. So yeah, I have that there. Actually, do I say the 10% thing? I can't actually remember off the top of my head. It's been so long, but I definitely have like just something along to the lines to stay updated. You know, here's our mailing list and I have a link to it there. Now, the problem of course is that on Etsy, it's not a live link.
So they can't just click on it?
No.
Yeah.
Right.
They would have to copy and paste it. So that is a bit frustrating, but at least you're telling them and you're giving them the option that it's there.
Yeah. And you can make the link short with like a shortener or something so that it's not like a super long and crazy thing to type into their browser so that they can actually remember it and type it in. Mm-hmm. While you were talking, Jess, I just quickly did a little quick Google thing to actually read to you guys what is part of the Etsy terms of service or whatever it's called. So they say you may receive a buyer's email address as a result of entering into a transaction with that person. This information may only be used for Etsy-related communication or for Etsy-facilitated transactions. You may not use this information for unsolicited, commercial messages or unauthorized transactions. Without the buyer's explicit consent, you may not add any Etsy member to your email or physical mailing list. I don't know who has a physical mailing list these days. I'm like, this is very 1995, but yeah. So really the key is consent and Etsy-related communication. So the thank you message at the end of the transaction, like you were saying, Jess, is great for that.
You're inviting them. You're not just
doing it. You are inviting them. Yeah. You're definitely not copy-pasting their email address and adding them to your list because that's really illegal. That's not nice. And it's also not nice for the person. Like, they're going to be like, why am I on your list? It's not only going to get you kicked out of Etsy, it's also just really bad. For your relationship with them. So don't just automatically add them. And also something else is don't email old customers, because I know a lot of people are always asking me, oh, I didn't know I should build an email list. Now I want to build one and I have like a few hundreds of people that I've had, you know, that were customers in the past and I just want to add them. And can I do that? And can I reopen a conversation with them to do that? And it's like, no, because that transaction is effectively finished. And so it's not legal to go back and add them or ask them after the transaction is finished.
That's really interesting because I've always said, like, if you're, and this is not Etsy specific, but like if you've sold things via your website over and you've suddenly created a mailing list, I've always thought, well, I think surely it's okay to send them one personal email, not like a bulk email. It would have to be a personal email and saying, I know you've bought from me in the past. Just wanted to let you know that I've created a mailing list. Here's the link. And never ever email them again after that, like giving them the one option to come and stay in contact with you. But I don't actually know the legalities.
Yeah, I mean, on your website, definitely it would do that. But for Etsy, it's because of the legalities. Yeah. You can't, because it's like not an Etsy-related communication. Yes.
So you can't convert them. Yeah,
you can't do that. So, but I mean, it doesn't mean you can't, you know, somehow build your list. And something else that's really cool that people do as well is adding those images or like one image as part of your product images. You know, you've got like several images that you can add. One of them could be like a graphic that you create in Canva that says, hey, join my email list for whatever, 10% off or whatever your reason to join is. And with the short link that we were mentioning before, so that, because people look at pictures more than they read the description.
Yeah.
So they can see that and then go and jump into your list from that link. So you can invite them and you can build your list on Etsy. It's just that you can't automatically add them.
No. And there is one more way that I really strongly recommend if you want to be building a mailing list is when you send the order, you have a little card or whatever that you put in that has it on there. I mean, this is very common. So, and especially if you offer some sort of discount or something, put that in there so that when they open their package, they'll see that invitation again. And if they have some sort of, you know, reason, say a discount or something like that to come, an incentive. Thank you, Meg. That's the word I was looking for.
It means the same thing as reason.
An incentive to come and shop with you again, then maybe they will, and you know, they have to join your mailing list to get that discount. So that's another good strategy to use.
I'm glad you guys answered that really well, because I'm not really an Etsy person, so I'm glad you guys can cover that.
And Etsy gets so complicated with all this stuff because it's like an entire different universe. They make their own rules and we all have to.
I think this is important to say too, is that those are the Etsy rules and they're not necessarily the email list subscription rules for the world. So it's really important to know your own for the world. It's really important to know the laws in your own country, but also if you have any subscribers from different countries, what those rules are. And this is the whole GDPR thing, you know, it's all coming into effect. So it's really important to know what the requirements are of you, not just what Etsy requires.
For sure.
All right. Next question is from Kathy. And I'm just rereading this one. And I remember I saw that in our Patreon feed. And I remember thinking, I should tell a girl about this question, the girls about this question, so that they think about what they want to share.
Oh, good. Thanks.
Yeah. I did it.
Thanks for the note.
So we're not prepared, but we'll see what we come up with. So one of the things I love best about the podcast is when you guys share stories and love. So acknowledging that we all have failures in our businesses, which failure have you each had that you learned the most from, and what did you learn? I'd love to hear you chat about it. That's when we all go, oh, crap, okay, what's my story?
Well, there's lots of failures. Oh, my God, so many failures.
I think, you know, like there isn't like a massive one that comes to mind where like, everything went downhill and it was like, you know, absolute drama. It's more like a lot of little ones that I decide to try not to remember because you're gonna have them, like stuff's gonna happen. I mean, not even as long as there was maybe last month, I decided to hire someone as, I guess I'll share that story. That's what I'm going with. I decided to hire help for copywriting on my new website. There was some things that I was like, I can't get this message right. I don't know if it was like a confidence on my hand because I'm French and I was like, it's not funny enough. It's not like, it's not where I want it to be. And I was so busy with other things that I was like, I'll just get a copywriter just this point for this one page to try to help me figure out how to talk about my business to my customers. And I did that very poorly, hired someone really too quickly because I was just in a rush, didn't do what I would usually recommend you do, which is working on a test project with them, making sure that they understand perfectly your customers, your audience, your business, whatever. I just kind of was like, oh, this girl is cool. I'm just going to work with her. And it just didn't work out. Like it's not that she did a bad job, but I did a bad job by asking what I wanted. And I just lost a lot of money on that. Like just completely, it was gone. Like, and it's not like I was going to try to find someone else. I was just like, no, I've lost time. I've lost money. And I still have to do this thing. And I felt like an absolute idiot. But it happened and I got angry for like half hour, maybe more, maybe an hour and a half. And I was like whinging to Nick and I was like, I'm such an idiot and blah, blah, blah. And I've lost so much money and this is crazy. And then I got over it because I was like, well, it's done now. So moving on, what can I do? I'm just going to write it myself. So these things happen and they're going to keep happening. So what have I learned from it? Always work on a test project before you hire for a bigger job. Like I should have asked for like a paragraph or something, you know, and I usually always do that. I don't know. I just wasn't thinking properly.
Yeah, I've got lots of stories. I've got some hiring story issues as well where one of my assistants once upon a time, I was not a good boss. I don't think I wasn't, because I mean, I've been a boss before and I've you know, been a manager and stuff, but only in I ran a tuition center before I started this business. And that was really easy. Like everything was really set out. The business was well structured. My job was very straightforward, but like hiring someone to work with me, and I was too lenient. Too quick. Like in other words, when somebody would say, oh, I'll get this done by this date, and then didn't, I'd be like, oh, I'll give you another chance and another chance and another chance.
Story of my life.
And it just got to the point where I had to end up firing this person. Like all of a sudden, it would have seemed like all of a sudden to them. And I felt quite bad about it. But at the same time, it was the right decision because and I said that in my email, I'm like, look, I haven't been, this is my fault as much as yours. I've obviously just been giving way too much leeway and not being clear about the fact that when I ask you to do these things, I expect you to get them done, not just, oh, I'll do it when I feel like it. So, and I, you know, that was totally my fault with not, and I think this is really instructive. If you are going to hire somebody, you have to know from the beginning what you expect, and you have to tell them and make them those expectations clear, and then stick to your guns, because I think it's a bit of a female socialization thing as well. You want to be nice and you want to be understanding, you know, and especially in our crafty world, you know, everybody's very caring and all that sort of thing. And that's important to a point, but your business is also important. And if you're not putting it first and you're actually paying someone to do something, you're going to start feeling resentful, and that is not a healthy working relationship. So that's one mistake I made. Other mistakes, product launch failures, so many of those. Where I would make a line of jewelry because I wanted to, you know, oh, I want to make this. This looks fun. It doesn't really fit with my other stuff, but I want to do it anyway. And then it would flop. And I'd be like, well, there's all that money gone on supplies and whatnot. And, you know, I think that's just part of it. I don't feel bad about that. I think it was very instructive. And over time, I did that less and less and very much kind of narrowed down what my business was and what it wasn't, and stopped doing the things that it wasn't, even though, oh, that's really pretty, but it doesn't fit with my business brand. So I need to not do that because I'm just going to lose money on it. So realizing that sort of thing as well. But at the same time, you have to experiment a little bit. Otherwise, one, you'll go crazy creatively, and two, you'll never evolve. So yeah, swings and roundabouts there.
It's all swings and roundabouts. I think I've done everything that you guys mentioned plus more in the failure stakes. I do have a story of a big one, which was, as you were saying, Deb, you haven't had one that's like everything's crazy and crashing and dramatic. And yeah, I've had that. So
do tell. I think I know. So, I think I know what it's going to be.
I know the one too. Yeah.
So basically I left my, employment, my job as a teacher, to start my business in a commercial space. And it went great, really great, for like a year and a bit, almost 2 years. And then I had a baby, and then it went really not great. And I was doing all the mistakes that you guys just mentioned, basically. So like being too nice to employees, not being clear with employees about what I wanted, also like hiring before I was even ready to hire. Cause I think my main issue with like learning this business stuff is that I just go totally like crazily obsessed with it and launch too quickly. I'm like the opposite of what most people are. Cause most people are, I can only do it when I'm ready. And it's like, no, you just have to hurry up and do it. I'm like, hey, I did it last week and I really shouldn't have, cause I really wasn't ready, not in place, and a little bit too eager. So, yeah, in the end, I decided to close that like arm of the business, I guess, and it was the best decision I ever made, and it could be seen as a failure, obviously, but it was such a lesson. So the 2.5 years that it was open, I just learned so, so, so much, and I probably will do it again in the future. Like, you know, I'm only 34 now, so I've got 70 or so years to try it again. But yes, I would do it a lot differently next time. And, it's good now because a lot of people who want to do similar things in Canberra come and ask me about the experience, and I can give them a whole lot of advice on what not to do, but also just to like, things that you need to have in place that you might think you have in place, but you probably don't have in place.
Mm-hmm. I think, did you do a video just about that where you were like answering questions and talking?
I did like an Ask Me Anything. It went for about like an hour and a half. It's a super long video, but yeah
we can put that in the show notes so that if you guys
aren't,
because sure. I think there's so much, like, it's so interesting, and like, I mean, obviously I'm sorry this happened, but at the same time,
I'm glad it happened, besides the debt. Like, that's the only bad thing, really. Like, the time invested and all that, I'm happy with, because I learned so much. And I met so many great people, and I saw how creative Canberra is as a community, and I saw how much people wanted the space. And I'm not sure if my, like, project was the impetus for all this other stuff happening now, but all this other stuff is happening now. It's kind of like everyone's, like, branched out and little things are happening, which I'm really, really happy with. So, it's fine. It's just the money. Shit when you have debt, but, you know, whatever. Work it out. That was my plan B, right? Yeah. When I was doing my business plan, it's like, what's your risk assessment? Like, what are you going to do if it fails? I'm like, get a job and pay off the debt.
And here we are.
That's where we're at.
Hey there, Maker. If you're loving the show, you can show us your support by becoming one of our patrons on Patreon for as little as $1 a month. We have behind the scenes content, we've got shout outs, we've got links happening. There's a whole bunch of different rewards for becoming a supporter. So head on over to thebusinessofmaking.com/support to find out more. It will really help us to make sure we can keep bringing this show to you every single week.
All right. Next question is from Paola again. And she says, if I can, I have another question. Sure you can. Everyone is talking about Pinterest. Yes. Especially me, probably, because I've talked about it. And how good it is to boost traffic for your website. But Pinterest has always been a source of inspiration for crafters or business owners like me and a way to find tips and tutorials such as your website and your community. Is it really a good way to attract customers for a handmade shop?
Hell yes.
Hell yes. Also, as a reminder for anyone that doesn't know who Paola is one of our Patreon. We've introduced her, I think, a couple of episodes ago.
Exactly.
But she sells home decors and homewares that are like country, shabby chic. So she's in like the interior design, decor, whatever that is called, niche, which is...
That's a double hell
massive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a double hell yeah, because it's like such a big niche in Pinterest. Like that's literally this, weddings, jewelry, everything really that people go on when they like looking to, you know, I don't know, make their house look better for inspiration on objects and stuff that they can purchase. So definitely a good niche to be into, to get into Pinterest. And also what I'd say is that Pinterest is actually going really much harder right now into the e-commerce kind of sphere where they're actually going with buyable pins where you can buy online, and they're really pushing the product aspect. So how can we make sure that people purchase from Pinterest?
Yeah, like with the pins and stuff. Can I just say, because I think you guys are going to answer this much better than me, so I'm just going to pip in first and say, I mean, you just need to think of Pinterest as another Google, right? It's where people search for ideas, but not just ideas, but information and inspiration and whatever else. So it's just like you want your website to become on the first page of Google. Same thing, you want to be found on Pinterest. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what I have to say. Now off to you guys, because you have more information.
Well, people use it like a life planner. Like anything that's happening in their life, they use Pinterest. Like when I was thinking about building a house, I have all these boards of like my ideal kitchen, my ideal lounge room, you know, like all these pins of inspiration. And that's exactly where your stuff is going to end up, you know, in those people who are interested in decor, home decor, people who want to buy a new piece of furniture. Like that's the whole point of why they're using it, is because they want to buy stuff to, you know, build, feather their nest basically. So it's absolutely a place where you want to be. And I cannot remember them off the top of my head. I have them in one of my courses, I think, but the statistics about the traffic on Pinterest and how many people actually buy stuff off Pinterest, like compared to other social media, it's way, way, way more effective. Like it's, the percentages are huge.
Mm. Right. So does that mean that people are not just, they're at a later stage in their like customer journey sort of thing they're ready to buy?
That's exactly what it means. I'm the same, Jess. I was trying to frantically Google stuff while you're talking, but I didn't
imagine. I can see you staring at your screen intently. Like, she's looking up stuff.
I was looking for the stats, but I don't know. I can't find the actual stats from the Pinterest page. I know they have it on their website, though, where they explain, maybe on in the business area.
Yeah, we'll find it.
Where they have all these stats and they explain what are demographics, because you do have to pay attention to that. Like if your customers aren't on Pinterest, then, you know, it's not going to help. And mostly it is a female demographic, but there is more and more men actually on the platform as well. But what you're saying, Jess, is so true, is that people actually go on Pinterest with the intention of buying. So they go not just, you know, you go on Instagram for like entertainment, motivation, inspiration, and like you have 5 minutes to kill and you just want to scroll and see beautiful images. Where like Pinterest is more like I go with an idea in mind. Like I want to decorate my room. I want to find a gift for my little nephew. I want to, you know.
I'm planning a party.
Yeah, exactly. And so I want to like buy something. And so people, I can't remember the stat, but it's impressive how many people actually say I have purchased from Pinterest and I go on Pinterest to make a purchase. So for that reason, it's just really important, I think, that you develop a Pinterest marketing plan, especially home decor. That's like massive, massive, massive.
Yeah.
Oh, I've got the stat. Look.
Oh, yeah.
I've got fun. It's from 2015 too, so it's probably even better now. 87% of pinners have purchased a product because of Pinterest. 87%.
Whew, that's huge.
And 93% of pinners have used it to plan a future purchase. So that's almost 100%. Let's run it up.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's really big and it's really worth it. And I think what I like the most about the platform too is that you can automate things.
Yes.
It's less of a social media platform. You don't have to like reply to comment and like, and there's less of that engagement. Yeah.
And it drives so much traffic to your website. Like it's, well, so, if you're using it right, it should drive so much traffic to your website. And so I think we all use Tailwind. I'm still on the free version of Tailwind. I don't know if you guys have upgraded.
I've
only just started using it, but it's amazing. Why did I not start using it sooner? I don't know.
I know. I was using BoardBuster for years because I was like, oh, I'm a BoardBuster, whatever it was called. It was like the competition to Tailwind.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, I don't think Tailwind is quite as good as this one. I just actually didn't even look into it. And then I got forced into it because BoardBuster like just shut down. And I was just like, oh, crap, I need to like reorganize my strategy. And Tailwind is amazing. It's worked really well. So, yeah, definitely worth it. Okay.
I would like to, before we go into the next question, put a little challenge into our Facebook group for people to say whether they are using Pinterest or not, if they have a Pinterest strategy, because I will put my hand up and say I'm not using it to the best, like I should be using it so much more. I do have a Tailwind account, don't use it. So I'd like some accountability to say that, let's say, like within 4 weeks of this episode going live published, I'd like to be more on top of that. And so if anyone else wants to join me in this little challenge, make sure that you jump into our Facebook group and we'll all be accountable to each other to get onto Pinterest a bit more,
which is thebusinessofmaking.com/Facebook if you'd like to find it easily, or just search The Business of Making on Facebook and we will turn up.
Okay, next question is from Nikki, and Nikki says, I need advice on how to stay on track. I've been a member of Tizit, Nikki is a member of my community for a while, and I stopped doing work there because of orders and moving to another city. So she's been really busy. My to-do list is pretty extensive, and I keep saying, after this and this and that, I will get back to doing this. This and that comes and goes, and I'm still not back to it. No one in my life gets what I do. My fiancé is a firefighter, retired, not fire inspector, and stares at me blankly when I talk SEO or other business-related items. Your podcast helps me keep saying thank you, ladies. And then I actually asked a follow-up question. I was like, what are you mostly distracted by? Is it personal stuff? Like you've moved to another city. Like, that's a big deal. Or is it like shiny business project that you're like, you can't keep your focus on one thing? And she said, I'm distracted by everything, including the literal squirrel outside my studio window. Which I thought was great. I was like, that's so cool. You get to be distracted by that because they're super cute. But shiny business, definitely. So definitely shiny business things, and also the personal life getting in the way. So like, how do you keep focus, I guess, is the question when everything is like everything's too much and there's just so much to do.
I think I'll just jump in.
Yeah.
I think my main and one and only answer always to this is you need to schedule in the time into a weekly routine for whatever it is that you need to do, whether it's admin or, you know, working on your business plan or strategy or making or whatever. Yeah. Even if it's only 2 hours a week, at least then you won't go 4 weeks without doing anything. You would have done at least 8 hours of whatever it is. So, schedule it into your weekly routine, and it's non-negotiable time.
I think this is the main thing. It's about what's really important to you. What's your priority? Because if it's not a priority, it won't happen. It's as simple as that. If you haven't really grokked that it is so important to you and you haven't put it first because you feel some sort of shame, or you feel like it's not actually important, like other people are telling you it's not important, so you're listening to them instead of listening to yourself. That's kind of the feeling I got there, was like, well, nobody else seems to think it's valuable. So I'm putting other things and maybe other people first rather than myself and what I want to do. It's not going to happen. So you really have to go, why is this important to me? Is it important to me? Why is it important to me? And I think once you really work that out and understand that and then schedule it in, and you have to be the one who says no to other people. You know, someone's like, oh, come and do this thing with me, or why haven't you done that thing yet? And we're like, well, I'll do it tomorrow or I'll do it next time. But right now I have decided that this is what I'm doing and this is important to me, so I'm going to do it. And you might get some pushback. So you have to be strong in that. And in your own brain, because you'll get pushback in your own brain.
Yeah. And I think the pushback from your own brain comes from thinking too much about the specific task and not thinking about what it's leading to being the priority. Because it's like, it's very hard to prioritize doing admin work over making or, you know, spending time with your partner or whatever. Mm. But when you actually think of the priority as your business growth and where you want to end up, and realize then that the task that needs doing now feeds into that priority, it makes it a little bit easier with that brain pushback.
Yeah. And I think you're probably trying to do too much too, because I know Nick is busy too, actually busy with orders, which is great. Like, you know, we want you to have sales. So she actually is making a lot. And so I guess between that and personal life, then it's like, I don't have much time left for projects that are like about growth and like actually, you know, like Pinterest we were just talking about, like I think Pinterest strategy and all this stuff. And so if you're trying to like commit to like five of those different projects and you're like, I'm working on my SEO, I'm doing Pinterest, I need to be more active on Instagram, like I would really like to challenge you to just not even like, I don't even want you to have a to-do list. Like the to-do list should be making for my orders, because that's like, you know, you have to make money and people are buying stuff, so make it for them and like ship it. But then after that, like the one item on the post-it note, like it shouldn't even be a to-do list. It should be one thing only. And I actually would love for you to commit to that and let us know either on the Patreon feed, which is like just for Patreon, or if you want to share it publicly in a Facebook group, but commit to just one project. Like what is the one thing that you want to do to grow further, and don't try to do it all. Cause then it, as you said, cause she said as well, if I try to do it all, then I just shut down and I just like give up.
Yeah. It's too much and it's overwhelming. And commit to a time frame. This really helps me. Like at the moment I'm saying in April, I am growing my mailing list. That is my one priority. Everything else comes after that. Well, you know, not after that, but every other business thing that's not like making orders or helping my students comes after that. I'm not focusing on any other growth stuff. I'm like 1 hour a day, because I have the time to do it for an hour a day every week, work day. In April, I'm doing work towards growing my mailing list. And I have, you know, the first hour I spent brainstorming all the way, I know how to do it. I just haven't been. So I've, you know, brainstorming all the ways, getting it all down and putting a plan together and then implementing it. And remember, it'll take you twice as long as you think it's going to take to do everything. So just work through it sequentially. Give yourself the time. Give yourself, you know, a project a month or something to work on. And then just keep all those other projects. They'll still be there tomorrow. They'll still be there next month. it never ends. And that's a good thing.
Yeah, there's no, it's not a race.
No.
I was just going to say on that, if you have time to read a book in between all the things you don't have time for, the one thing book, but also there's the one thing podcast. So we'll link that in the show notes. I actually listened to the audio book of the one thing and it was great. It was like common sense. The person who they've got to do the audio book is a bit dry and maybe a little bit slow. So I kind of listened to it on 1.5 speed because we don't have a lot of time to do the one thing, but it had a lot of good insight in it. So that might help us as well, just to sort of get that into your head a bit more.
Yeah. I'll have to read that. Sounds good.
Yeah, I think I heard an interview with the guy that wrote it on which podcast I was listening to. But, yeah, it was really interesting. Like, you know, it's common sense, but at the same time, none of us do it properly. So it's kind of like
so it's just good to, like, get that, reaffirmation, which I think that word has been co-opted and I'm not keen on it, but anyway,
a reminder.
Yeah.
All right, I think we have time for one, maybe two more.
Cool.
Okay, Aaliyah, that's actually two questions from Aaliyah and they're kind of related. So she's saying, I'd love to know a quick checklist of questions I should be asking myself before I start spending money on new projects. What is the best way to sanity check myself that this is really taking me towards my goal and not just following a fad?
Don't ask me because I'm the worst. This is why. It's one of the reasons why the commercial space didn't work. Besides the fact that I had like no focus, I just spent money. I'm like, I got to make the space pretty. It's a business expense. No, I'm definitely the worst. Listen to the other studio. Go.
I love that. I use that business expense line all the time with Nikki. He's like, you're still spending the money.
Deductible, man. It's tax deductible. Like,
I can pay it back on tax. It's not, you don't get the whole lot back. Like, it doesn't work like that.
Like, I'm very sensible with money, but still, yeah. Are you following a fad? Is it going to be a profitable fad? If it is, great. Like, you know, if it's something that's going to stick around for long enough for you to make money out of it, then do it. But if it's, you know, that's the problem with fads. How long do they stick around? You know, certain things have more time, you know, seem to have a longer half-life than others, I guess. And also, it, you know, is it shiny thing syndrome? Like, are you just making it because you want to make it? Not, you got to think of your customers. It always comes back to that. You know, is it in line with your brand? Is it something that you think your current customers will buy? And I think it's easier for you in the, your sort of industry, you know, soap making and stuff. You have a very strong brand, and you, I'm assuming you would have a lot of repeat customers who love your aesthetic. So you've got to make sure it fits with that aesthetic. And if it does, then, you know, my suggestion generally would be start small, you know, make a smaller amount and see how it goes rather than diving into making heaps.
And I guess the only thing I would add is maybe if you're also talking about stuff that you want to invest in your business, not necessarily like product and restocking and all that, but like business training, photography, branding, getting a new website, all of this type of marketing stuff, like, yeah, there's definitely the fad thing. I understand. Like, sometimes you get on a webinar because you want to learn about Instagram stories, mm-hmm. and then you're being sold like this training, and it's so tempting because the sales pitch was made so beautifully, and you're like, mm-hmm. oh, I totally need to do that right now. Mm-hmm. And it's like, just take a step back, never buy something unless you're thinking about it for like a few weeks. Mm-hmm. Like, that's my rule. I'm like, yeah. this is just like, I've just decided this morning. I woke up and I didn't have a plan to buy this thing, and then now I'm like, with my credit card in hand, I'm like, oh, what I need to because that's not good. Like, it needs to be something that you've actually thought of before a few times, and that really makes sense, and that you know, had a few nights of sleep to think about. Deb,
do you want to just mention really, really briefly the profit first thing?
Yeah, well, actually, a next question. So let's dive into that, because she says, okay, cool. I follow the profit first method.
Oh, cool.
Something we've talked about in another episode, which I do not remember which one it was, but
we'll find it. We'll link it.
It was something about finances, or anyway, it's a book by Mike, and I can't remember his last name either. Mike Mikhailovich.
Mikhailovich.
Yes. Yeah, it's really, really hard to pronounce, you guys. We'll put it in the show notes because it's unpronounceable. But it's a book that helps you sort out your business finances, really, by having a percentage that you use for your tax and then for supplies. And then, you know, so you know exactly how much you can spend and how much you should pay yourself. And so Leah is saying, I follow the profit first method for my business finances. And so I'm literally only spending cash. I don't put anything on credit card anymore, which is great. Mm-hmm. Super hard to know what to consider an essential purchase when I need so many things to just keep running. How do you decide what supplies to restock first when you're a product-based business and running a tight cash flow ship?
What I'm lowest on. That's literally what I go for. Like, we do a stock take every so often. Well, Nick does a stock take every so often when I ask him to.
I love Nick. He's so nice. You're like bossing him around. You're like, we need to do a stock take. You're doing
it. It's his job. So I'm like, and then he just gives me a list. He's like, we're low on this, 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 and this, and I order it. Now that's easy for us because we have a standard set of materials, right? And we know, because we've been in business long enough, we know which materials run out faster than others. So when I make the order, I know, well, half round 5mm sterling silver wire, I need to order more than half round 4mm sterling silver wire, because we sell way more rings made out of that one than this one. So that comes into the decision making as well. It's like, I know how much I'm going to need over time, so I make sure that I buy more of what we sell more of and less of what we sell less of. I only buy stuff when we need to replace, like when we're running low. So we run a very tight ship in that way. You know, we try. I mean, of course, I've got so much, so many old materials lying around that I bought thinking we'd use them and we'd never use them. you know, I've got all these old gemstones and whatever. I really should destash at some stage, but whatever. So that's how I do it.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. It's like, you want to spend the money on materials that you know are selling as well. So if you know, and I guess you get better at that when you get sales. It's a bit harder when you're just getting started, because you're like, well, what is going to be selling and what isn't, you know? But the more sales you get, the more insights you get into what is actually going to be selling out more. And then think ahead as well. Yeah. Like, if you're going to be having a promotion next month, or there's something for Valentine's, that's a slightly different product that you have in mind and things like that. I guess that's more important. But if you don't have money for now, because you know you're running on a smaller budget for like experiencing and getting new stuff so that you can create new products to see if they work, then that's fine. You need to just be doing what you're doing for a bit longer.
Yeah. Mm, I think maybe sometimes people are also tempted by purchasing supplies in bulk, but maybe they're not quite ready to do that because obviously in bulk is cheaper. So they think of the per piece price that would make their production cost cheaper. But if it's something that you haven't like proven the concept for, that you don't know if it sells or not, there's no point having 1,000 of that thing because it's just a waste of money. Like it's not actually going to make profit for
That's
you.
That's a really important point.
I've done that many times.
I was just going to say, I have a little story. It's not actually a bad one, but I think probably about 2 or 3 years ago, I just got to the point where I'm like, right, I'm going to buy my bubble mailers that we send our jewelry in. I'm just going to buy, I think like 1,000 of them or something, like because it's bulk. Now that's fine. We still have like a box or something left, but I was thinking very long term there. I'm like, this is a couple of years worth of stuff. And that's okay because I know I've been in business long enough now that I know we're going to do them.
Exactly.
But I wouldn't have done that at the beginning.
Yeah. So that's the exact same story, but I did do it at the beginning and it was a mistake. So when I opened the hub, I was doing subscription craft boxes as well. I'm like, I'm going to be sending these out every single month and I'm going to like be getting 100 and da-da-da. So I bought these bloody boxes, which are, they're great boxes, but it's been years since I closed the hub and I still have a box of bloody boxes that I'm, you know, never going to use for anything. So yeah, been there, done that. Don't do that, peeps.
I love it. Okay, I think this was our last question for today. We will be doing another episode because we have more questions, but we do need to wrap it up today. So we're hoping that you enjoyed this. I was going to say, let us know if you want another episode, but no, actually there will be another episode because you guys are awesome and you asked a lot of questions and we want to cover them all, but we don't have time to do it just right now. So thank you so much for being with us today. And if you like the show, make sure you subscribe on whichever platform you are currently listening to this podcast on, because it really helps us. Make sure you give us a review if you have time, or ratings, because that helps more people find us. And if you're listening on your phone, take a screenshot and share that on your Instagram or wherever. We love, and tag us in, because we love to see that and we share that on our own account. And that really makes us happy and really helps us reach more people. So we appreciate you for showing up every week. And talk to you next Wednesday.
Thank you. Tina.
Bye, everyone.
One more?
What were you doing?
Sorry. You just said there was one more.
You said we were doing one more, and then you went into our wrap up.
Oh, one more, as in like episode. Like,
I thought you meant one more question.
And they're like, because you guys can't see, but we can see each other. And they're like waving at me, and I'm like, what am I doing wrong here? So sorry, guys.
So we've covered all the questions. There's no more questions.
We've covered all of the questions for
awesome.
Today.
Awesome. I'm very happy.
We will do another episode with more questions. That's what I was saying. Obviously, I wasn't here. Okay.
Thanks, Deb. Sorry, Deb.
Sorry, guys. I was in here. But yeah, so that's it for today.